Hey, and welcome to a very special episode of the SJXR podcast. We're coming to you live and in color with the entire Kuji clan. We've got the Kuji you know and love.
Hey.
He's still here. We've got brother Chris.
Hello.
We've got other brother Michael.
Hey, hey.
What's up, guys? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
We're talking about your guys' favorite movie ever, Up. Is that right? You guys can't get enough of this shit?
I mean, in a previous podcast, I heard that I'd never seen this movie before.
Have you seen this movie before? I'm pretty sure you haven't.
I have seen this movie before. I remember the crying.
Yeah.
Too much crying.
You can never forget that.
You remember your own crying?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess I don't really know why we wanted to bring you guys all in for this one, but I'm glad we did.
I wanted to do it because it's such a bummer of a movie. I thought the more people to suffer, the better, I guess.
Okay. Help soften the blow.
It's a
heart-wrenching movie.
Unless you might do that for something. Unless you might do that for Cars, just so we don't have to.
Yeah, but Cars,
maybe Cars too.
It's unsalvageable.
So yeah, today we're talking about Up, 2009 Pixar film, directed by Pete Docter, and screenplay by Bob Peterson and Pete Docter. A couple of names definitely recognized from other Pixar films in the past. And what a film it is. Yeah. So what were your thoughts coming back into it then, I guess?
We'll start with Chris.
Start with Chris. Always start with Chris.
I remember, I guess just the main plot. I can't remember when I watched it last, but I kind of forgot many of like the, I guess, kind of terrible parts. Because I kind of just blocked them out of my mind.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, that's what's funny, because whenever I think back on this movie, I really only think of the first, like, 5 minutes, which is probably pretty common, because that's kind of the real heart-wrenching short they have there with the main characters. But yeah, I always kind of forget the second half and don't even really think about it. But, Michael, what were you thinking coming back to Up?
Yeah, I guess I had the opposite. I forgot the actual main plot of the movie, but I remembered all the sad parts. So, yeah, it was interesting kind of seeing how they drove the plot forward other than just having, like, a really sad story play out.
You know, the plot, I guess we'll jump into that real quick. It's a guy, Carl, whatever the hell his last name is, Fredrickson, played by Ed Asner. He's a young, we introduced him as a young buck who's into adventure, specifically Charles M. Muntz and his adventures on his Spirit of Adventure. I'm saying adventure way too many times already. And then we meet his love of his life, Ellie, and then they're both, they share that same spirit and fall in love and are domesticated quickly. Give up their dreams of seeking out wild adventure and have a horrible miscarriage.
Jesus
That's
Christ.
The whole plot, right, Gigi?
Yeah. Then the movie ends.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more about two people who break into a house and want to live on a mountain or on a cliff in South America.
Yeah, I want to live on Paradise Falls. They want to go to South America, but then they get domesticated.
They make a very concerted effort not to mention where in South Africa, in South America.
I mean, they say going to Venezuela a lot.
Did they?
Yeah.
True.
Well, it did say that on the tickets that he bought as well, I think.
All right. Well,
it's because everyone knows paradise is in Venezuela.
Yep, especially right now. They're doing real good right now.
Well, yeah, tell me what you were thinking coming in. What you're thinking of that.
Because
before the call, you said this movie was a big pile of poop, I think.
Some of those words, probably. I similarly also just remember, like, the first 5 minutes. I didn't remember the other dogs at all, which, or the villain. So, but it made it worse for me, actually. It was worse than just the first 5 minutes. I just didn't like the tone. Never changed from super depressing and sad. It just went sad, sad, sad the entire time.
Hmm.
I mean, it kind of
interesting.
Uplifted near the end.
Yeah, I think that's kind of that was the goal, but
uplifted at the end.
Black heart can't be uplifted.
It's not. It doesn't get better. The kid's dad is like dead or something. I don't know. That's a huge bummer.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't. There are still sad notes throughout it, and yeah, the kid is Russell, a little what do you call it? Boy Scout, who's trying to help the main character Carl Fredrickson, and then get his last badge so he can, you know, go up the ranks in his wilderness.
Maybe his dad will love him.
Adventure group, whatever it's called. His whole motivation is his. Dad who's either dead or left the family. Well, no, I guess that don't they talk about it? I think the dad just left, right?
It seemed like he was just kind of not around very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I couldn't tell if he was just an absent dad or if he actually like left. Because at the end, the mom is there by herself, also seemingly unconcerned
but
that
the mom who he
what?
The mom who he calls by her first name and then he corrects Carl, saying, "She's not my mom."
Oh, Phyllis.
So, yeah.
Well, I thought maybe that could have been just like a secretary or something, because he says he calls him all the time, and Phyllis says, "Shut up."
You think his dad's just a powerful businessman who doesn't have time for his kid, and so he talks to him through his secretary, Phyllis?
Yeah, that's what I think.
That's the story you built in your head.
Well, you think he left and like banged some other lady, and now that's Phyllis?
Yeah, I assumed he left, and he's got a new woman named Phyllis, and his Russell's mother is the only one that's still really around in the picture.
Well, then how does he talk to, like, does he go over, like, their house, like his dad's house, and Phyllis is like, stop being here and bothering your father, like, because he said Phyllis tells him he bothers his dad too much, but, like,
yeah, he does say that, like, his dad thinks he's a bother. I think there's a lot of backstory left unsaid for Russell for you to, you know, fill in your own.
Yeah, I don't really want to know.
Whatever. Apply. Yeah, it's maybe best left unsaid. So, I guess the big draw of this movie is this concept of flying house. So, Ed Asner, I'm just going to call him Ed Asner from now on.
Okay.
He, you know, when Ellie dies, he's left as an old man, holding onto this house that they built together as like the last piece he has to remember his wife. But all around him, evil construction company is trying to develop it, and he's, you know, holding out, doesn't want to sell, which is something that happens every day in normal life. And then once he has a moment of frustration where he violently attacks one of the construction workers. He's forced to, I guess the courts put him in a retirement home.
I had a lot of issue with all this.
I wrote that down.
First of all, the foreman guy is like an alien. Like,
yeah.
He's very weird looking.
Chris, you watch the X-Files, you know.
And it's not clear, like, he hits him over the head with his cane, which has tennis balls at the end of it, but somehow the guy is bleeding.
He's, like, covered in blood.
He's covered, yeah, he's...
And also, the guy's trying to, like, steal his mailbox. I'd hit him, too. Like, he's trying to steal his property. And the second that happens, the alien guy is like, yes, finally, I found a way. I don't think courts can, like, just steal your property for committing crime. I don't think that's, like, how that works. Like, oh, you assaulted a guy, so I get your house now.
Yeah, it seemed like it was very justifiable assault.
Just to mention, I believe, so not that construction worker, but the one who is nice to him, asked him how his morning was and all that, that was John Ratzenberger doing the voice.
Yep, our boy. He's makes a cameo in every movie, so this is his little cameo here. Such a friendly voice he has.
I kind of wish he had a bigger role, but...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, always. I wish he was one of the dogs. That'd be fun.
Speaking of the dogs...
Yeah, you want to jump straight to the dogs? Well, let's... I guess, did you have any other thoughts on that intro, kind of the... You know, we see them as the kids, and then it jumps into the montage of them falling in love, developing this house, having their miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, like I said, what I always think about with the movie. I'm sure a lot of people do, too.
I don't know why they went.
Still make you cry?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I definitely cried.
Mm. No. I didn't cry because why would you... Because I think she, I thought she was just, like, sterile. I didn't think she had a miscarriage. They never really, like...
I think that might have been what it was. Because they never had kids after that point.
That's...
True. That's weird. That's like, yeah, I don't know why I jumped to miscarriage, but... Well, yeah, because that makes more sense.
I think, like, the movie synopsis says miscarriage.
Hmm.
But yeah, that doesn't make... They kind of gloss over that real quick. Which I get because it's a kids' movie, but also just like have her like have no bottom half of her body or something instead of that.
That
seems extreme.
I mean, I think the point was just it was a montage showing their life and how, you know, they got married, they got busy, they started doing, you know, adult things like thinking about children, and they had hardship. You know, it was just trying to condense, like, a lifetime into, you know, whatever, 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So why did every time they needed to raid their paradise jar, did they smash it?
Yeah.
It's a pretty wide bottleneck. Yeah.
I wrote that down, too. It seemed like a waste of jars.
They got a lot of them, though.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, why not just put it in a jar you could easily remove the money from? Like, any kind of piggy bank. That's ever been made.
This is random, but does anybody think the Carl character looked like Ron Cadillac from Archer?
Oh, I'm familiar with that guy. But I'll say
sure. You guys watch Archer? Come on.
I watch a few of them.
A little bit.
Okay, screw you guys.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, KG.
All right, how about Drew Carey? Carl looked like Drew Carey a little bit. Come on, give me something.
I'll agree with that one just to make you feel good.
Yeah. Tina mentioned to me that she had read that they actually tried to model Carl after the voice actor.
Yeah, Ed Asner.
Yeah.
He's got kind of a square head.
Yeah.
You would know him as Santa in Elf for the younger people, or he was, you know, on older stuff too. The character was based on Ed Asner and some other old-timey actors like Spencer Tracy, who's kind of an old curmudgeon guy. He doesn't look like him, but that's kind of where they got the personality from, I think. And, you know, it's interesting that it's a kids' movie, but, I mean, the main character is like a grumpy old man, which was kind of... playing up with a couple of other their recent with Ratatouille, like the main character's a rat. These are kind of like unconventional lead characters for children's movies, but it kind of works. And Pete Docter, the director, he didn't have a problem with it. He didn't think kids would have a problem with it because he said, well, kids can just relate to their grandparents. So do you think it was a relatable character? You think it was maybe weird that he's an old grumpy widower?
I think Pixar did it again where they have a main character that's very unlikable. Always.
You didn't like him at all?
No, he was like a pussy as a kid. And he just, I don't know, he didn't make any sense.
He didn't make any sense?
I don't know. I was able to relate. I mean, I like he, at at the beginning of the movie and through maybe the first half of it, he is, you know, shown as a grumpy old man. But I think the whole point of showing his backstory was so that you kind of have an idea that, you know, he's gone through a lot. He's at a point where he's just, I don't know, trying to like deal with the death of his wife and all that. So he puts on this like grumpy facade, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah, seeing him as a kid with that like the sense of adventure he had, kind of, you know, that's dormant inside him the whole time. And you're kind of waiting for that to come out, and that's what Russell and, you know, all the other wacky stuff brings out in him throughout the movie. So that's, it gives you that emotional bedrock they're going for. So yeah, so he's, you know, the curmudgeon-y old guy. One thing they show in their little montage with him and his wife Ellie is that he's a balloon salesman at a zoo, where she is an animal trainer or something. And so that sets up the idea that he's able to inflate his house with balloons.
He's a balloon expert.
He must be extremely fast too, because he's given a night since the trial. It's like, okay, you're gonna have to go to a retirement home the next day, and he's able to not only inflate what they say is 10,000 to 20,000 balloons, but also rig up his house with like sails and a whole steering mechanism.
Right. So one, did he have all that stuff already?
That was my question.
Two, so this bothered me. Why did he wait until they were literally at his door and took his suitcase before flying away? Like, why didn't he just do that when he was done?
Yeah, he's got a flair for the dramatic, I guess.
Yeah.
And then secondly, if the balloons were inflated inside of his house, wouldn't that be providing lift, and shouldn't his house have been off the ground anyway?
Christopher?
Yeah, Christopher, you answer this question.
I mean, yes, unless he like somehow tied him to the ground instead of his house beforehand. Because it seemed like they were like under a tarp behind his house.
I mean, he also tied all the balloons to a non-structural part of the house. He tied it to the grate in the fireplace, which is definitely not like bolted down or anything.
Yeah, we'll get that architecture expertise here, Kuji. Is this possible for houses? You're saying no?
You'd have to tie it to the foundation, but you'd have to lift like an entire like monolithic slab from underneath the building.
I did look up to see if the physics works out.
Nice.
Because I was going to do the math myself, but then I was like, wait, the internet exists, and somebody probably did this already. And there was an entire Wired article on the physics of the balloons. And they estimated that the house would weigh approximately 100,000 pounds. And then given that there were about, I think they estimated like 112,000 balloons, based on the size of the like balloon cloud. That would provide enough lift to lift a house of that weight.
There you go.
Well,
thank you,
Chris. You do like chemistry and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So my question to you is, if it was in fact filled with helium, wouldn't it just keep rising until it like hit the atmosphere and exploded?
Well, it would keep rising until it. Oh wait. I mean, it had helium to achieve like some sort of like buoyancy.
It would kind of normalize at a certain elevation, the way it does in the movie.
That's what I was assuming.
Okay, so it all checks out, except for maybe the amount of balloons. Because I was reading, they said 10,000 or 20,000 is what they were animating.
Oh, so interesting. So they got the estimate on the balloons wrong.
Yeah. Step up your game, Pete Doctor. Come on.
Also, Chrisler, if you got like super highly pressurized helium, would that make it or maybe that's the opposite?
Yeah, that's why you can keep, well, it's not why, but like the helium canisters.
Yeah, he had a whole lot of those at his house, just sitting around.
His yard was littered with them. Chris, why do balloons float?
Oh, because of helium.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
Also,
it's lighter than whatever.
This movie's a little irresponsible, right? Isn't helium a very limited resource now? In this movie,
yeah,
is.
I think there was a shortage. Yeah,
is it still endangered? Did we get more of it?
It's not really something. It's not really something you
resident.
Can make.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Christopher.
Can't you just smash a bunch of hydrogens together? Glue them together?
Yes, but you'd have to be, like, inside the sun to do that.
do we not have a base in the sun yet?
Not yet.
I mean, no. If you want to make one, that'd be pretty cool. So you'd probably
Well,
die.
Can't you just... What's like three? Is that sodium?
What's that? No, it's like lithium or something.
It's not.
I don't know. It's like a metal.
Can you just take a thing off of that and make a helium?
This is a very technical talk you got here, KJ.
Yeah, like can you just take like a proton and a neutron.
You're losing our audience.
An electrino or whatever. Can you just
take a thing from here, smash into there?
Because then it'll be helium, you know. You just take a couple little particles off, boom.
Yeah, it's that easy.
I am a chemist.
It's
I don't
not
know
like
you guys knew this.
That's the premise of the atomic bombs.
Wait, what?
Atomic bombs, like they split atoms. Well, I guess not. I guess.
Yeah, splitting it. You're just breaking it up.
Well, yeah, that's like what you're basically talking about.
Yeah, you're just going on vacation. We'll give them to somebody else. We can give those to hydrogen and then make them helium too. Boom, look.
Boom, we just got say, it.
No, literally, it'll be like a boom.
Yeah. Let's say if it could be done, it would be done already.
All right. Well, are there a lot of like helium lobbyists out there? Like how many people want helium that much?
Is there a big helium?
Like balloon
cell. Yeah.
Like Carl Fredrickson.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's used in experiments because of it being, I think, relatively inert.
Yeah, it's basically just completely inert.
Yeah, so I think that's the problem. Not that we won't have balloons for kids' birthday parties, but that we might not be able to use it in experiments that would otherwise need it.
Mm, okay. But as long as we can still use it for fun stuff, then that's fine.
So, guys... You guys start rationing those balloons.
Yeah, don't do like Carl Fredrickson here. Save it. So we get the house flying in the air, and like we're talking about, there are some logical fallacies potentially here. And then when he's in the air and he discovers Russell, his little buddy, the Boy Scouts, trapped with him on the boat or on the house. They're flying up. They've made it out of the city. And then they are deep in the middle of a gigantic thunderstorm. So this brings up the two things that I'm thinking here. The entire movie from that point forward must be a dream, or they'd all died. Or he...
So you're saying it's a Jacob Ladders?
It's a real Jacob's Ladder scenario. Or he dies of grief the night he... is forced to give up his house, and then even the balloon part of the house is also part of this Jacob Ladder situation. Because from this point on, it gets pretty wild and pretty outrageous, some of the things that happen, including flying and cooking dogs.
Yeah.
The dog... We'll get to the dogs.
We'll get to the dogs.
But I'm gonna kick it back to our science expert here. At that air level, would you in fact not be able to breathe? Like in that?
I mean, they're above the cloud line, and that's like where planes are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been in one of those.
So I mean, it's like if you're climbing Mount Everest, which is like below that level, you need like oxygen. So yes, you would not be able to breathe.
But can't like, what if it was David Blaine?
Well, he could do anything.
Could do anything.
Yeah. So you're saying maybe this was the Russell and Carl both just passed out in this flying house, and then the rest was just some shared fever dream?
Ooh, like a group hallucination?
Yeah, very likely.
Is that real? I always wonder that. Anybody?
We got any experts on that?
I've heard the term used a lot, like group or like crowd hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
The whole premise of Blair Witch 2 is based off of it.
Oh, Blair Witch 2, I never saw that one.
Sure, don't. It was, good don't. It was not.
Well, that's kind of like, I mean, that's explained what people say a lot of, like, UFO sightings is explained, right? Group hysteria or hallucinations. Yeah. But, I mean, so they're in this thunderstorm, and then Ed Asner is knocked out, and I guess Russell, the little kid, steers the house perfectly to get to South America. So I'm like,
yeah,
there's no way.
Well, he had a GPS.
No, he didn't. He threw out the window.
But he had already flown it to South America by
yeah,
that
yeah, yeah. They were in South America, and they saw it on the map, and then right. Which... Come on, dude. Like, just use your hand. Like, you evolve with a thumb for a reason. Just, like, hold it.
And, you know, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, obviously it's a cartoon, but it's just the first, like, 10 minutes is so grounded in, like, such harsh reality that it's such a wild turn, like, the second half of the movie, like I'm saying, it's... You know, so I'm convinced it's some kind of Jacob's Ladder scenario.
I mean, I guess it's really convenient that he throws the GPS out the window, Carl cuts off a few balloons, and then they just happen to land in Paradise Falls.
Right across the street. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It all works out way too well.
Yeah. It.
And there's, also, I mean, shouldn't it be more called... stuff. Yeah.
Shouldn't be called like Paradiso Falles or something Spanish.
Why?
Well,
oh, because it's in South America. You could.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to the locals.
Also, yeah. Paradiso sounds so much better than paradise. Always.
And Paradise Falls. So that one of the other things. So they get there. They arrive. They're right across the way, and. Another question I have here, his plan is to park his house right next to the Paradise Falls, which requires them to get out and walk and go through all the horrible adventures they go through. But I thought, well, you landed there, you know, count your blessings, park your house right there, and then you've got a lovely view of Paradise Falls. So which would you rather have, yeah. I guess? I don't know if you guys watched the girls' final season, but at one point someone asks a question that's supposed to be a very deep question, but it's kind of a stupid question. But it's, would you rather live in a nice apartment with a view of a shitty one or a shitty apartment with a view of a nice one?
The nice one.
What do you guys think?
The nice one, 100%.
Yeah.
The nice one.
That's what I was thinking. The question's very stupid, but it's supposed to be... It was presented as a very deep philosophical explanation of like personalities, but
hey, you wanna eat a turkey dinner and watch some guy eat a bowl of shit, or you wanna eat a bowl of shit and watch a guy eat a turkey dinner? Your choice. I think there's something there. They just didn't really flesh it out as much as they should have.
Yeah,
I mean, so I think you could maybe make the argument for that for Carl anyway that. He was kind of trying to fulfill, you know, his adventure with his mm-hmm. wife, and maybe at that point he just didn't want the adventure to be over because that would mean having to actually confront his feelings about the death of his wife.
True.
So if he just kept it going, then that meant like he had more to do.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Kind of keep giving him a reason to live, like when old people have a job at Publix.
Oh, that's rough, man. Or like when I retire and I'm going to work real. At a post office till I die.
Post office?
Yeah, man, I'm going to be a post office.
You're going to be a little postman?
Guy. Little Postman. Yeah, I want to be like on the beat. Like I want to be like a beat cop postman.
I don't think that's a thing.
I'll do both. I'll do a little bit of each. Hey, well,
dream
you know,
your dreams.
I just want to be like one of the, you know, like I just want to have, you know, be active. So you walk around, deliver mail. Some people recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs attack you. I don't know. It's adventure, you know. You never know what's gonna happen.
Be like the little little neighborhood guy. Become a fixture.
I should work for the post office. That's a good ad campaign. It's a very adventurous job, being a postman. You know how many, like, postal workers, like, still get attacked by dogs this day? Like, it's like, I saw the number the other day. It's like an alarming amount for
300
it being
million.
2017. It's like 90%, I think, or something.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine. And they even kind of touch on that in this movie, because this is where we get introduced to first the bird, Kevin, that Charles Muntz, the original adventure guy, has been seeking his entire life. And then soon after, Doug, this talking dog, who I think is probably the best part of the second half for me, and he refers to Russell, and as all the dogs do, as a small mailman. So that ties in nicely. Mailman. And that's your dream.
Yeah, I want to be a small mailman. I want to slowly shrink and become a mailman.
So, like I said, the Doug is the dog with the little talking collar that Charles Muntz developed. Him and all the other dog clan have these attached to them, which is another, like, I think another... point for my argument that this is some kind of weird fever dream heaven scenario, because that's pretty outrageous. Also, and even the we haven't gotten there yet in the movie, but when he meets up with Charles Muntz, this is a guy who, when Carl Fredrickson was a child, he was a you know, full-grown adult going on these these adventures. But then now that Carl's like 60-70, Charles Muntz is still only slightly older.
Yeah, I said, like, he must be, like, 1,000.
he might have been in his 90s. I don't know. I think it's kind of feasible if he was, like, in his 20s.
Yeah, maybe he was younger.
When, yeah.
He wouldn't be as spry as he is.
Not
also,
that
if he could invent a dog-to-human translator, like, and he can't catch a bird, like, what the hell?
Also, he could probably just go back to America with that invention and get all the recognition he's open for.
Yeah.
But actually, in regards to the time potential issue there, they actually did think about that, and one of the original story ideas had them discovering that this bird, Kevin, lays, like, eggs that have some kind of fountain of youth qualities to them, and that would be what would explain why Charles Muntz is still there and still alive. But thankfully they thought that was too confusing and just kind of like left it for whatever.
Yeah. I would also be confused why, if he could get eggs, he wouldn't just bring one of those back.
Right.
Well, I was confused as to why, well, first of all, where'd he get all these goddamn dogs? And they all seem to be dudes.
That was my other question, yeah. Is he breeding those dogs,
and
I guess? It's a lot of dogs.
Maybe he had a cloning machine, too, that he invented. Because he's like 1,000, so, and dogs don't live that long. They live under 20 years, so he's been there for like, this must be like the fourth cycle of dogs. But then also, he has one golden retriever, one Doberman, and then the rest are just like terrifying, like, bulldogs, and, like, there's only one nice dog. All the rest of them are, like, horrifying.
Yeah, Doug's the only friendly one.
Also, none of the dogs... We don't hear any female dogs either, so I don't understand how the breeding would work.
Cloner, man.
That's Yeah, he's got a cloner. That was my other question. I didn't notice... I meant to try and key into it. If those main three dogs were the same three dogs that they show him, like, leaving with... Because I don't think they were, but I don't remember now. I should have paid attention.
Yeah. I don't. Well, that also, okay. That also gets me too, because at the beginning of the movie, he's like in a theater watching what seems like a video of this guy like leaving on adventure, but then I guess it's like just a newsreel of the guy leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, do people do that like in like the 20s or whatever? Do they like,
yeah,
watch a video of people going on adventures and then they would never know if they came back or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. He was supposed to kind of be based on like Charles Lindbergh, I guess. So maybe they did similar stuff for that guy. We're far too young to know. We're young.
Yeah.
Young spry men. Any older listeners out there, please write in, let us know. Set us straight. The one thing, though, that they kind of, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but could be the answer to all of our questions, is Paradise Falls is referred to as a land lost in time. So maybe all this months being there and like never dying and all these dogs multiplying without ever dying is just kind of a part of this. Maybe it's a very magical land that they've landed in. Time isn't an issue.
I could see that. A little Eldorado.
Maybe a stretch. Eldorado. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of thought about that when I saw one of the pictures saying that. It'd be mm-hmm. interesting. But I wrote down a couple times that he definitely banged those dogs.
Oh. I mean, yeah. And then it crossed my mind, but it should have.
It's one of those things that you're just supposed to think about on your own. They kind of lead you into it, but.
Well, also, not talking to humans for like 400 years or whatever, like, you go insane in like a week. There's no way he would last that long.
Well, he was pretty insane. Okay. To be fair.
That's true.
He killed like dozens of people who came to see him.
Yeah.
Right.
And just like collected their helmets.
Well, actually, so I guess maybe we should step back to him meeting Charles Muntz, I guess. Because I think they land, they realize that somehow the house is not just floating away, even though they got off of it. And they tie the house to themselves, which sounds bad.
Yeah, another another jump in logic there.
And so they're just going to like walk around the perimeter to get to the falls, I guess, is there somewhat interesting mm-hmm. plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're doing that, and they go through meeting Kevin, meeting Doug. They're going to they're like running away from the dogs and everything. And then at one point, when they stop to camp, and it's like raining out, it looks like they're exactly where they started, like directly across from the falls.
I wrote that down. Like, they made zero progress that first day.
Yeah, they have some kind of weird labyrinth.
Well, I think later on he does say that there's some kind of labyrinth where I guess the bird lives or mm-hmm. something like that. I mean, maybe this just gives credence to like the idea that this is somewhat of like a magical place where, if I don't know, physical reality doesn't work out the same.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And also, like, ooh, how Muntz never caught the bird in his million years of being there.
He caught a skeleton.
But wait, wasn't that a fake skeleton?
I thought it was real.
Well, I thought the whole premise was he caught it. Maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought he found the skeleton and presented that. But he was discredited because there was like fake bones or something. And that's what
put him into exile. Yeah, you're right.
So that's his whole motivation.
Or they didn't think that. I think it was that scientists looked at it and they were like, nah, this can't be real. And that was
okay.
It.
Okay. So, because they have the in the newsreel, it's like the scientists like just jamming the bones together and he's like, nah, that can't be right.
I'll just drink my whiskey and smoke my cigarettes and I'll be healthy. It'd be great. This is a phony. Well, like, not to switch up a little, but when he meets the dog, right? He thinks it's a person, whatever.
Yeah.
But little dude, Russell, is like, I don't know if I like dogs. My apartment can't have dogs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that mean anything. I mean...
Yeah,
I like fire, but my apartment shouldn't be on fire. I don't know, like...
He's a very impressionable boy.
Yeah, clearly.
It was kind of just showing, I guess, that he was sort of sheltered, despite, I guess, being a wilderness scout or whatever it was.
Yeah, that he, like, never actually did anything in the wilderness.
Yeah, because even when they're building the tent, I think he says he's only ever built them inside, indoors. And that's another part where they revealed that his dad's not in the picture, because he's like, well, why didn't your dad show you how to do it?
Yeah, this is where they have that sad conversation.
I thought about it, and like, I never say that anymore, like, well, your dad do this, your mom do this, like, ever anymore, because nobody has two parents anymore. I don't know. Sorry, that was really dark, but...
Well, it's a very presumptive thing to ask, Ed Asner.
Yeah. Also, why does your dad have to show you to make it sound? Why can't your mom do it? Or your dog that you can't have in the apartment? Or your uncle?
Yeah, why does your talking dog help you?
Well, and I think this... I think Michael can relate with this, and I, that Boy Scouts has very little to do with actual skill and more to do with, like, nepotism and... whose dad's the scout leader.
Yeah, I mean, at least the troop that we were in. Maybe there are other ones that are actually more about the actual skills and camping and whatnot, but
yeah,
that was not my experience.
No.
So how long were you guys in Boy Scouts?
I don't know. So I was in Cub Scouts, you know, probably since I was in, like,
the kid,
second or third grade, something like that.
Isn't that were you in Tiger Cubs?
No, I wasn't.
I think I was.
I was too.
What's the difference?
I think, anyway.
And then I think in high school was when I stopped doing it, because I realized that there was a lot of, like, bullshit politics involved, and yeah, it wasn't fun or interesting anymore.
Yeah, and you wanted to get laid.
I think I just wanted to graduate from IB. I think that was, you know, my main motivation.
See, I was never in any of these scouts, so I don't even know what the difference is. Tiger, Eagle, Boy.
Well, Tiger Cubs is like the pre-K. It's like, and then kindergarten and first grade, maybe, and then you go to Cubs. So it's like before you're, like, capable of doing anything. It's just like an after-school program, essentially. And then Cub Scouts is like middle school... like grammar, middle school, and then Boy Scouts is high school.
Yeah.
And then, like, well, it's Tiger Cubs, Cub Scouts, then you get to Weeblos, which is, like, right before Boy
Such
Scouts.
Such a good name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. The Weeblos. And then Eagle Scout is a thing, too? Is that...
Well, because there's different... In Boy Scouts, there's different ranks. There's, like, Tenderfoot, second class, first class... Star, Life, and then Eagle, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Because it's basically like a precursor to the military, is what they're trying to do.
Makes sense, yeah.
And so you don't jerk off.
Plus cultural appropriation from Native Americans.
Yeah,
lots. And then, at least at the time, they didn't allow gay scouts, which was also kind of a big deal for me, because I was not cool with that being... that, like, level of, I don't know,
discrimination.
Yeah. And now they can have gay leaders now, even. They've come around.
Man, were they like openly discriminating, though, when you were there?
I mean, it was a group of high school aged boys in the early 2000s, so I mean, I think just inherently there was a lot of anti-gay sentiment. Mm-hmm.
Or even, but even like the leaders and stuff. Do you like?
No, I don't think there was anything like explicit from them.
I think it was sort of like one of those, like, you just understood that it wasn't a place for that sort of thing. I don't think that it was never outwardly said there, but it was definitely policy, though.
Yeah, we did have similar to military.
One Jewish guy, which I thought was awesome, because other than that, it was like very Christian centric as well.
Yeah, technically, I don't think atheists are allowed to be Boy Scouts, because I think part of the oath is that you at least believe in a higher power. They softened it so it doesn't have to be the Christian God, but it's got to be something.
Yeah, like Cthulhu or whatever.
Yeah, they really modernized. They're a pasta god.
Pastafarian.
And did you guys have to get badges like that, or is that just like a TV movie thing? Like, do you have to help the old person badge?
No, that's real.
Oh, okay.
They're called merit badges.
You had to kill an old person to get that one.
You had to take it from them.
They have so many merit badges, and it's not necessarily anything to do with what you would traditionally imagine like a Boy Scout would do. Like, I went to summer camp one year and I got a water skiing merit badge.
Oh, hell yeah.
I got one called the pulp and paper merit badge, where I learned how paper's made.
Oh, that's much more boring than the water skiing one.
It is super boring. Like, well, it was more like, if you imagine like trying to get a major in college, it was like to get to the next level, to the next like level of scout, you had to get like a certain amount, and there was like certain like capstone merit badges that you had to get to also go through. But there was like he said he had all of them. I don't think you can even get all of them in Boy Scouts, because there's so many.
Yeah, that, because at the end they're showing all the kids like that graduating, I guess, and most of them only have like a handful, but then like Russell's got like 50 of them. So I was wondering if there was like, okay, is that like a level you have to hit? But I guess not. Who knows?
And we knew kids who had a lot of them, but like all their parents were leaders, and like basically you need a leader to sign off on it, and so they kind of like a shoe in for them. Also, a lot of them are regionally specific, because to get the pulp and paper one, for example, I had to go to some kid's house whose mom happened to have like a paper like recycler machine. Like, it was one of those things, like you like soak all the paper particles and you like chop them all up and then like repress them into paper. Like,
this is even more boring than I expected. That machinery.
Oh, it was so much more boring.
Well, I guess back to the less boring topic of this movie. We're kind of at the point, I guess, after he meets Charles Muntz, and he brings him on board. They're all friendly. He's, you know, bringing him in, having his chef dog cooking up food. Which I didn't remember that part, and I was really hoping it was going to be like kind of a goof where the dog actually is a terrible cook, because that'd be really funny to me. It's just like kibbles and bits.
Curious how he cooked without like opposable thumbs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another question left unanswered.
Or are they tied
probably
up
very
Russell?
Wastefully?
Yeah.
There was a part where he like is ordering wine from his dogs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They come by with the bottle, and they literally like fill two glasses and spill all of the rest of the bottle.
And just drop it.
Yeah, I
feel like
that
dogs part. Be good. They'd be good like sommeliers, because their noses are so complex. I was very happy about that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, and they did make another dog thing where they said like red car, blue car at the end, whatever. But the dog says gray car, which isn't true. Dogs aren't colorblind; they just have a limited color spectrum.
The more you know.
So you're the dog expert.
Also, when Alpha, like the Alpha dog, had that like speaker malfunction, I want to say that. Did you guys also think that he sounded kind of like Betty from Kung Pao?
Not familiar with that.
Oh, well, Matt.
Wait,
please.
Which one's Eddie?
Alpha, and Betty. Is what I said.
Oh, Betty.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think about that. I just thought chipmunk. But you might very much be right. My name is Betty. Your clothes are black.
Your shoes are red.
Have you seen Kung Pao? Any of you guys besides me and Christopher who watched it all the time?
I guess not.
I mean, I incidentally saw it because you guys watched it so much.
And you aren't as passionate as we are?
No.
It's a great
Taiga.
Movie.
Taiga.
This is a movie? Oh, Kung Pao. I remember that movie.
Yeah, Lady
with the One
fist.
Boob.
Yeah,
is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think I watched it. But now I know what you're talking about.
Well, have it on DVD if you ever want to watch it, which
please.
We're going to now.
Yeah, please do it. Maybe we'll do it on The Hard Man.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, Alpha the dog was voiced actually by Bob Peterson, not Pete Bobberson. Bob Peterson is one of the directors. He did Doug too.
That's cool.
I thought the Alpha gag with his voice thing was all right, but the Doug character I thought was pretty full of laughs.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm all right with it.
You're fine with it?
This
it didn't warm
this
your
be
heart.
That, like, that cute, dumb dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like... Well, the thing that got me is that they're in, like, the Amazon, and they keep thinking they see a squirrel, which doesn't exist to wherever they are. There's also no other creatures besides them and the birds.
Yeah. That's true. And presumably, if, like, most of these dogs were born there, I guess, then they've never even seen a squirrel, so how do they even know what it is? Another major plot hole, guys.
Yeah, man.
It's unwatchable now.
So at this point, the movie kind of tries to, you know, wrap it all together with a lot of the big action parts.
Mm-hmm.
Once Charles Muntz discovers that they have the bird with them, they, you know, they have to escape him. He's trying to kill them all. They escape. And it was for the concept of the flying house, they got kind of like everything they could out of it because they use it really well in that, you know, running away escape scene because they're, you know, they jump and they're kind of floating with it. So that was really satisfying to watch. I love when a movie has like a great concept and then they go back to like utilize it as much as possible and get like every bit they can out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it could sort of.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that. Like, that house, like, because it was tied to Carl, that it symbolized Ellie's, like, death looming over him. And then, as he progressed, and was like, you know what, maybe I don't need to have this looming over me for the rest of my life, that he could just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I think you cracked it.
Yeah.
it was like an albatross. Yeah, tied across, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's completely right.
But it helps them. I guess it helps him throughout the story, kind of, you know, make his escape, like I'm saying, or even kind of like he mentions it's shielding them from the rain in the thunderstorm. But yeah, it's not until he completely gets rid of it all when he dumps out all the garbage in the house in his attempt to save Russell because he's realigned his priorities at that point after. They kind of give away. He kind of gives away Kevin. He chooses the house over the bird when Charles Muntz comes and captures him. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not until he's made it to Paradise Falls. He looks in the book, his adventure book that Ellie made, and he kind of has his moment to let everything go. And then he literally does it and throws everything out the door.
Yeah.
And he also throws out the Paradise Falls change and it breaks another jar.
Final time.
Yeah. And it was still full of change. I guess he kept putting money in it.
Yeah, it's interesting. He sits down in the chair to look at the book, or before he even looks at the book, he kind of sits there and you can kind of tell that, like, he's there. He's like exactly where he's been driving towards the whole movie. And then he sits down and he still doesn't look comfortable. Like, he's still like, well, now I'm here, but, you know, like, what next?
Yeah. This isn't better.
Yeah, and then he opens a book and he sees that note, at which point I noted again that I cry again as he's reading this book.
That's the worst part.
Yeah, how many cries did we record now? So that's the intro, and then this point, any cries in the middle?
I don't think there were any other ones.
Every time they broke the Paradise Falls jar.
So it's like 6 or 7 cries right there. I mean, throughout the movie, it's kind of played for jokes, but like Russell talking about like his kind of his family situation, he kind of just drops little notes here and there, and you know, in retrospect, they're all pretty like heartbreaking. But he's just like a cute little character.
Yeah, just looms over them the whole time.
Yeah, just kind of glosses over, just throws it out there. Yeah, my dad never taught me how to make a tent. It's like, well, that's pretty sad.
What I didn't get is why didn't they just adopt the kid when she was like infertile or had a miscarriage or whatever? Like, come on, guys.
that's what I was thinking. Because that would just be a bit easier. I mean, it wouldn't be theirs, but it'd still be a kid.
They were so heartbroken about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, stop being selfish, guys. Just steal a kid.
Yeah, go buy a baby.
I mean, adopting a kid is a rough, it's a long process and it's expensive. So maybe they just couldn't afford it.
They didn't have any more
about getting, like,
coins in the jar.
But it doesn't seem like they had very high-paying jobs. Because, like, if that was their savings account, like,
they should have invested it.
They could only save, like, quarters at a time.
Well, like, she got a really good job as, like, an ornithologist, and then he was just, like, a balloon dude.
For, like, 40 years.
Yeah, I put that on him.
Yeah, that's true. Good job security, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say about the balloons. At her funeral, there's a bunch of balloons everywhere. I'm like, well, that's kind of your thing. That wasn't really her thing. I don't know, you just put your own thing on her funeral. Make it about yourself.
So should it have just been, like, full of birds?
Yeah, like, yeah, bird pinatas, maybe bird balloons.
Yeah, all that time, he's just a guy who just inflates balloons. He doesn't even make balloon animals. That's pretty low-skill position. Could be replaced with a robot real easily.
Yeah, it looks like he works like a zoo or something. I mean, like, ask, like, yo, can I pick up some extra hours, like, doing anything else?
Nope, he's just the balloon guy.
So going back to, like, when, you know, Carl Munz and... like when Russ reveals that they have seen the bird or like were with the bird.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Carl, like, who's obviously like has just met his hero and is so excited. And then all of a sudden the bird that he showed that he didn't even really like, he's like, oh, I've got to protect this bird now. I'm going to turn on my childhood hero.
Yeah. Yeah. The timing of his like emotional shift was kind of like after that.
Yeah.
He did have, like, Russell asked him, cross your heart, you'll protect Kevin. And he kind of, like, called back to Ellie and all that. But that's not a lot that I guess could be that big of a change. But.
Well, they treated cross your heart like it was, like, this heartfelt statement. But that's, like, a super common statement that, like, every child says ever.
Yeah, but then even when he does, like, help the bird escape and brings him all the way to the babies, he, like, so quickly leaves that to protect the house again.
Well, that time his house is on fire, though. But you're right, Michael. It doesn't make sense that he would... Because if his character would stay true to himself, he would have been like, yeah, take the bird. Like, he's trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also kind of did that thing that they do in movies where you could almost, like, just explain the situation, but instead he kind of, like, tries to hide that he knows the bird. Like, because Charles,
right,
like, accuses him of coming to, I guess, steal his property and keep the bird for himself. And he could have been like, hey, this bird's just been following me, man. I don't even like that bird.
Yeah. So he has babies, too. I can take it to the babies.
Yeah, just take one baby. The bird doesn't care.
Or, like, take a picture. Cameras exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I was also kind of confused throughout with the time period it's supposed to be. I guess this was supposed to be like semi-present day. So yeah, he could have taken a picture or maybe a video of the bird. That would be even more proof. If that's all he needs is proof. Yeah.
And like everybody who exiled him and proved his like skeleton was wrong are long dead by this point.
Yes.
That's true. Most people probably even don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he'd fly back and be like, I've got it, and everyone would be like, who the hell are you?
Oh, so they refer to his vehicle as a blimp when it is in fact a dirigible, I believe.
Ooh.
Also something I learned from Archer. That thing was like massive. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, big old blimp. I don't know how they power it, but again, just don't worry about that. Also, okay, so then we're going to get to the finale, which is kind of the like one of the points where it's kind of like completely off the rails, because you've got Charles Munch is escaping with the bird in the blimp, I guess heading back to America. Somehow the kid, Russell, grabs a couple balloons and a leaf blower, and not only A, finds the dirigible, but catches up to it.
Yeah.
And then Carl empties his house and, you know, gets the house ready to fly again. Then he also catches up to this propelled vehicle when he's, I guess, relying only on the wind. And then they've got the whole flying dogs in cars, I mean, in planes situation that completely outrageous.
Yeah. That bothered me so much.
I didn't even really need.
Like, I don't understand how they're steered.
Yeah, how do they steer?
They did. They did make a Star Wars reference as they were coming out, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Red Leader.
Red Leader. I forget what, like, Red One, whatever they said. But yeah, it was the same scene as like when the X-Wings come out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But and then that kid. Well, then they also shoot. They don't shoot bullets. They shoot like
poison darts,
syringes.
Yeah,
shooting dirty syringes at him.
Sorry, bro. You got HPV now.
But it was weird because like that didn't really need. I guess it added some tension to the safety of the kid. But like nothing really came of that. They just kind of they flew around him. I don't remember what happened, so I was assuming that they were gonna like shoot the balloons, and that's what would like take the house down. But then they just kind of they crash when he says there's a squirrel.
Yeah.
I was like,
right.
If you're gonna go so far to have flying dogs and planes, like, make it worthwhile.
I was also kind of amazed how quickly Charles Munce was just like, oh, you're here. Okay, I'm just going to straight up, like, murder a child now.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the very evil guy in the movie manner where he just kind of leaves him, assuming he's going to die.
Yeah. Slowly sliding down.
And he was, like, basically going to just, like, impale Carl with his sword when they're fighting. It's, like, it was pretty intense.
They only kill one person in this whole movie. It's Charles.
Oh yeah.
Because the dogs all have parachutes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thankfully they show the dogs and the parachutes, or else that'd be kind of heartbreaking to watch three dogs crash their planes into each other and die.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be rough.
That'd be the biggest cry in the movie.
It's still a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that... Okay, well, then everything, like, then yeah, everything kind of works itself out.
Mm-hmm.
They say goodbye to the house.
Well, before we go back real quick.
Yeah.
So like when they were like climbing outside of the dirigible.
Nice.
On that ladder, it reminded me of like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Hmm.
When he like hit that crazy like priest guy. That's what it reminded me of. When like on the ladder.
Oh yeah, when they
Kalima. They were talking about.
What? Because they're like climbing up the bridge breaks, and he's climbing up, right?
Yeah.
They're referring to yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Indiana Jones above him, and yeah.
That guy just ripped somebody's heart out, I think, too. Right before the scene.
And wasn't there also an Indiana Jones where they fight on a blimp too, or a dirigible?
Yeah, Nazis. Yeah,
Nazis. Yeah, a lot of Nazis fight. Yeah, they love those dirigibles.
Well, Yeah. I don't know. They do also. I don't know if you guys saw, but speaking of Star Wars and the time period,
mm-hmm.
also later on they're like going doing stuff together. And in the marquee, Star Wars is on.
Yeah.
Is playing. Yeah. So it's either episode one or it takes place in the past. I don't know.
Yeah, and this movie was made in 2009. I'm looking up here. Disney didn't acquire Lucasfilm until 2012. But maybe I guess...
When was episode three out?
Good question.
I'm not sure. My keyboard doesn't work.
That was when you need that keyboard.
I know.
Yeah, I have a mechanical one, so that'd be way too loud.
So I'm just gonna.
It came out 2005. Revenge of the Sith, 2005.
I think all keyboards are mechanical, technically.
Mine's really clicky.
You have one from like Minority Report.
I have a typewriter, actually. That's what I use.
Yeah. Chick, 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 ding.
So that kind of brings us to the end. They've overcome their enemy there in Charles Muntz, and then they ride the dirigible directly to the badge ceremony because they're all still like covered in dirt.
They're filthy.
So that timing worked out
pretty
well.
Schedule to keep to.
Yeah.
There was a scene that like Carl, like the house, they lose the house basically, like that he loses hold on it and he saves the kid instead.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of just see it like floating off into the distance, and it's at that point that like he kind of seems like he's, you know, accepted, like he's ready to move on to the next part of his adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's significant,
which is I guess being this kid's like dad or something, being his big brother, I guess. Big brother, big sister.
But also, if you think about it, it was like floating down at like a slow rate, so the house is probably fine. It probably just landed softly somewhere.
Well, they show it. It landed right by the Paradise Falls.
Yeah.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so everything works out.
Everybody's happy. All right.
So at the badge ceremony, they said like two badges. I don't know if you paid attention. Like what they said for the two badges. Ooh. Those two kids had before.
Hit us with them,
Russell. So the first one was extreme mountaineering lore.
Okay.
And the other one was wild animal defensive arts.
Yeah, I remember that was a good one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then even, I don't know if you guys watched the credits, but throughout they have like badges on either side of them. They don't say what they are, but one of them was just like a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, I don't really know what that one was supposed to be for.
That's the
I turned this off a second. The credits are rolling. I was like,
you gotta watch the credits, man. Come on. I keep telling you.
I watched a little bit. I watched until it started scrolling and then I stopped.
No, that's fine.
I was already pretty upset.
Yeah, you just hated this movie.
Yeah.
Hey, it's just, to me, overall, I think this movie was, like, Pixar's attempt to make a serious movie that wasn't just like all goofball like the rest of the movies. Like they were trying to make like a piece of work instead of like just a kid's movie. I think they were trying to expand past that.
Yeah.
Like to demonstrate you can make a serious drama as an animated movie and it still like would work.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely some of the most adult topics being brought up.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm curious, yeah. Like, how much would kids really pick up on the story with Carl? Like, understanding, like, the whole thing with his wife?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't even pick it up on it completely because I assumed it was a miscarriage when it's probably just not. But next time I have to bring some kids on, ask them. Did you kids understand the horrible introduction to this movie and how heartbreaking it's supposed to be?
Well, that and like also the absentee dad thing is also like
mm-hmm.
really heavy for kids.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that it doesn't really lay out
the whole subplot of gentrification also.
True. Yeah. And even whole, like I what?
I would say the whole Russell's dad part, they don't really, like, fix that. There's no, like, happy ending. Just, like, because of Carl, he doesn't have to really be sad about his dad anymore. But it's not, like...
He's a new dad.
Yeah, you can't just do that. It doesn't say, like, oh, you should not feel bad about it. It's just find someone else to take his place.
Hmm.
Yeah, because he says his dad promised. Because the reason he wants his badge so bad is because he said his dad promised, if I get this badge, he'll show up to my ceremony. And then he just didn't. And they don't really show. Because that should affect him negatively. But he's like, oh, that's cool. I got this old guy instead. But it's like, nah, you should still be bummed about that.
Yeah.
And his mom seems super neglectful. Like, she didn't even, like, notice her son was missing for, like, a week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Carl was in charge of kidnapping.
Yeah, also, I guess now that he's back in the States, does he still have to, like, go to the retirement home? I guess he gave up his property when he left.
Yeah.
So I guess
that's all they seem to care about.
Yeah. I wonder where he lives now. He got rid of all of his possessions.
Russell's house, I mean.
He lives in the dirigible, actually.
That's true. It's pretty swanky in there.
Yeah, okay. Got a dog cook. Yeah, they all switch real quick too. They're like, "Oh wait, Alpha Dog has a cone in his head." All right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Doug becomes a new alpha. Just takes the cone of shame.
Yeah. Big turnaround.
So yeah, I mean, I was coming back into this movie not really too excited to watch it. I don't know. I like I said, I remember like I liked the beginning. Ends a little wacky, but it kind of worked better than I remember it. It is kind of like you were saying, Chris. It has a lot of like Indiana Jones feel to it with like the like early 1900s serials kind of adventure, which I appreciate a little bit more watching it this time. Here's a couple other early concepts for the film. Let me know what you guys think about this. Initially, it was supposed to feature a floating castle with two brothers vying to inherit their father's kingdom. When one brother falls to earth, they encounter a tall bird who helps them understand each other.
I want to say that sounds dumb, but I guess if you said the plot's up and like no one heard about it, you'd probably say the same thing. True. It really depends on how they just implemented it and how good it would be.
Yeah, that doesn't sound as like fun. Less whimsical, a little bit more a straightforward like fantasy.
Yeah.
That sounds more like a children's movie than this one turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I would have liked that better, but
was that kind of, I've never seen it, but is that what's the plot to the floating castle? Is that a what's it called, Miyazaki movie or whatever?
Castle in the Sky.
Howl's Moving Castle?
Howl's Moving Castle.
That's Flying Castle.
No, it's moving. That sounds right.
It's Howl's Moving Castle, yeah.
Does it not fly? It only moves?
Yeah, it walks.
It does not fly. It actually walks.
Actually, I saw in a Wikipedia thing that Pete Docter is highly influenced by Hayao Miyazaki, which is probably a reason why that some of this is like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel like we're all influenced by Miyazaki at this point.
Yeah.
Me and Christopher famously watched Spirited Away 21 times in a row.
Oh, man.
Great
movie.
It still wasn't
enough. We could have watched it more.
I watched it again, and I'm like, can I turn this repeat, please? Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, I want more. I got to watch My Neighbor Totoro, though.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I haven't watched those.
I mean, maybe this is... Do you guys have room for another podcast, the Miyazaki podcast?
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
We do have to, after this one, do our Jackie Chan podcast, though.
That's right.
True.
the Jackie Chan cast.
Jackie Chan cast, or Talking Chan, as I like.
Well, that's a good one.
We'll work out the title later.
Himo Guai Guai Fighting Zhao.
Jackie!
Jackie! Man, that was a good show. Where's Jackie Chan? Probably in China.
I mentioned the other early plot with the magical Fountain of Youth eggs, but the another one here was the idea was that it was kind of, I guess, supposed to be similar with Carl and Russell flying in a house, but instead of landing in that, like, by the waterfall, they land on a Soviet-era spy ship camouflaged as a giant cloud. That sounds pretty intense.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. Definitely bring the Russians into it. It would be good.
Yeah. Was like, Stalin on the ship, too?
Wait, what?
Is Joseph Stalin on the ship, too? Is like.
Yeah, it's a Soviet ship lost in time. Stalin, we're all still hanging out there.
I mean, it's interesting to see the evolution of the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder how much they do that concurrently, or like they just kind of mutate it and it ends up in a certain place.
Yeah, because according to what I'm reading here, I'm sure most of that, this was, you know, being discussed for a while, like at least looks like 2005, some of it was starting to be worked on. So I'm sure it went through many iterations. Before they settle on this.
And they probably have to have everything, like the story and everything, finished before they start animating to a certain degree.
And they have to
True.
Probably get approval from, like, Disney and stuff, don't they? Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think they also do storyboarding before that point, too. Like, they would do sketches of how it would go roughly by frame.
Yeah.
Mm.
So there's a lot of storyboarding stuff and like the special features. I watched a lot of it for Toy Story.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'd love to see the storyboarding for the Soviet version. It's pretty badass.
Hello, comrade. Welcome to my ship.
And Russell's actually wearing I don't say Hitler Youth, but that's wrong.
I mean, he kind of already looks like that.
Did Hitler have did the Russians have like a Hitler Youth for, like analog, like a Stalin's Youth? They have anything like that?
Stalin's kids.
Yeah.
Little Stalins.
So you want to talk about the accolades of this movie? For example, it got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes. Wow. Yeah.
Is that a callback to Cars?
Never call back to Cars.
Yeah, please don't. Fourth highest grossing ever Pixar movie, I mean, which I guess makes sense. The best accolade I found, well, I mean, it was not received 5 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture, which I think we talked about on Ratatouille or one of the earlier ones. There was a big like struggled to get it nominated, and then like Up and some of the other ones finally got that recognition. But the best one was, I guess, at the Cannes Film Festival, they give out a Palm Dog Award for the best canine performances, and Doug took that home. He beat out the fox from Antichrist and the black poodle from Inglourious Bastards.
Don't remember. Well, I don't think I ever saw Antichrist.
I didn't either. I didn't remember
and what is a fox a dog? I mean, it's like a canid, but I don't know if it's a dog. And there was a poodle in Inglourious Bastards?
Yeah, I don't remember it either. I guess that's why I didn't win.
Was it a Jew dog? Is that why?
Yeah, boy.
It seems, I don't know, it seems wrong that an animated dog won, like, best dog performance.
Seems like cheating.
Yeah, especially because of a talking dog.
Yeah, yeah, he's got the benefit of speech, too.
The most human thing. It's just a dog form.
Well, that's all I got. Have any other parting words?
So, I know that there's that recurring theme, or I guess just kind of with an Easter egg of like that Pizza Planet car.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And I saw it. It was at the end when they're having ice cream on the corner. It was like under the big dirigible.
Oh
yeah. In the parking lot.
Good eye.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what we forgot to do? Speaking of things. That's a theme on the show. We forgot to talk about what would be a good theme park ride.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that because there was a video game made for Up. And I was thinking of a couple of scenes like, oh, this would make for a fun video game. I don't know what. I guess just flying in the house would be a pretty cool theme park ride.
You know, it'd be fun. I got two things. I got two. There could be like a Peter Pan-esque ride where it's just like you're floating around in a house with the balloons and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's probably, yeah, the easiest.
Or, and hear me out.
Uh-oh.
What if you had an interactive, like, space where it was like, okay. It was an exact replica of the house in the movie, but you could, like, be inside the house. But then it was just, like, they had it on, like, some sort of hydraulic thing. So, like, it would, like, rock back and forth like it was, you know.
Like Star Tours?
Floating. I guess, yeah, sort of like that. I was thinking mm-hmm. more of, like, not like a ride as much as, like, you could just go in the house from up. And it would just be, like, floating and, like, there'd be little things in the house. But it wouldn't be exactly a ride, per se. But also, a Star Tours thing would be cool, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, what if you're in the house, and then, like, looking out the windows is, like, the movie's kind of happening while you're in the house?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then you could just have it rock, like, and then during a thunderstorm, you could have it, like, water spray on the windows and stuff, you know. Look at all this.
Have the poison darts shoot at you.
Yeah, you could even have the like seats be like his chair and Ellie's chair. You could be sitting
yeah.
in those.
Oh. The cute. Chairs.
Oh, those chairs.
And when he was throwing everything out, he had the decency to just prop those up in the right way. On a cliff.
It's good ideas. Oh, another Easter egg that they have when he first flies out of the house, flying out of like the little neighborhood. You see a girl in her room, and she's got the Pixar ball next to her. And then across from the bed, there's a Lotso, the bear that we'll see in Toy Story 3.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't like him. He's yeah. a mean bear.
Yeah, you're not supposed to like him.
There was a reference when Carl, either Carl or Russ is flying by the dirigible, and you get a shot of the dogs playing poker.
Oh yeah,
which is a reference to the famous painting of dogs playing poker.
Yeah. No. Cool. Yeah, he's even got the little ace in his collar.
I didn't see that either. What was I doing?
Did you watch this movie?
I did, man. I did.
Oh, even another
Easter egg? Easter egg.
Another one. It's kind of in Ratatouille, but apparently at one point a dog barks at the rat in Ratatouille, and it's supposed to be Doug. It's like the same silhouette as Doug. I don't remember that from the movie, but I read it in the Wikipedia.
I mean, he's just
there. You go.
Just a golden retriever, right? So.
Yeah, he's kind of got like a bulbous nose, though.
Maybe he's a lab. I don't know.
Yeah. There's also the Wilhelm scream from one of the dogs falling off the cliff.
Oh yeah, yeah, I heard that. That was kind of weird. I guess they got the voice thing, so he programmed that in just in case.
Yeah.
I guess that's all of them, though. Yeah. We did it. I think this was long-awaited episode. We talked about it a long time for bringing on the whole Coogee clan, and I think it went all right.
I think it's you.
No, it was great. Loved having you guys on. We'll have to do it again for Kung Pao.
Yeah.
When we branch off to talk about that movie.
All right, and then the next episode we have is going to be
another shorts combo.
Little shorts. We got La Luna, which played before Brave. Mm. And then La Blue Umbrella. That played in front of Monsters U. Two movies I haven't seen.
Me neither. That's exciting.
Actually, after, because Toy Story 3 is the next one we're doing. After Toy Story 3, I haven't seen any Pixar movies after Toy Story 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, same here. Also, some of the ones before that, too. So, we're going into uncharted territory.
I'm excited, bro.
Me too. So, tune in next time. Follow us on Twitter at @AsterixRPodcast. Send in any questions or comments to AsterixR@gmail.com. And tune in next time for those fun shorts. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
I love the stinger.